Brandon Patrick George, or BPG to his friends, grew up in Dayton, Ohio, and he was listening to all kinds of music. On the weekends, though, he'd go to the Baptist church with his grandmother. That was inspirational. And then, in the evening, they would watch PBS live from Lincoln Center. That's how he was introduced to classical music. Well, his career has been a whirlwind of exciting opportunities, and in 2018, he succeeded Valerie Coleman as the flutist for Imani Winds. He's just released his solo debut, and that's what we're going to be exploring this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Almacher. Brandon, how did you, as a young kid growing up in Dayton, Ohio, fall in love with playing the flute?
It's a very interesting story. For me, it was very visual, actually. I saw it hanging in a pawn shop window, and I just thought it was the most beautiful thing. And I remember when I was in elementary school, the kids carrying around their different cases for band class. And there was the big bulky trombone case that could stand straight up, or the big saxophone or trumpet case. But what I was really interested in was this rectangular case that was like so small and compact, almost like a little lunchbox. And so I realized that that same shiny instrument that I wanted to know more about was in that case. So it was, for me, it was a very visual thing, but I always identified with the sound of the flute in cartoons and in movies, and I just had to play it.
So this probably doesn't even really impact you, but I know from my generation, there weren't a lot of guys playing the flute.
Actually, it was the same when I was in elementary school. It's so interesting. Yeah, I looked around and most of the young students who were carrying that instrument were girls. So I was actually the only boy in my band class in fifth grade in the flute section. But it was interesting because before I could be in the full band, I just had, I guess, what you would call sectionals. So it was just the band director working one-on-one with the flute players. And so that was sort of like when I went to band, it was sort of this flute class, but I was the only boy.
Was picking up an instrument like that something that was kind of normal in your family environment? Were there other musicians in your family?
No, I don't come from a family of musicians, but my family loves music. I grew up hearing lots of music, rhythm and blues, soul on the weekends with my grandmother, great music in the Baptist church growing up. So, but there was really not a lot of classical music, but my introduction to that was through PBS and a great performer series and live from Lincoln Center. And I will watch those performances with my grandmother. And so that sort of really got me extremely interested in classical music through those programs.
What would we do without our grandparents? I mean, I talk to so many people, it's like, oh, my grandma inspired me.
Yeah, I mean, I so wish that she were still with us, because right at the time she passed away in 2000, that was sort of around the time that I was starting to get very serious about the flute and really started developing, if you will. But I really owe a lot to her and to those programs that we shared together.
She must have been so proud of you.
Oh, I like to think so.
What is your goal as a musician?
My goal as a musician is to hopefully speak to people through music. I think music has the power to bring such peace and solace to people. But I also think that music has the ability to reflect the human experience. You know, we see this very clearly in genres such as opera, right? Where we watch stories being told, stories of love, of grief, passion. We watch these stories play out over and over again. They're timeless, and they're timeless because they're just the human experience. And so I hope that by my performing music that I'm able to speak to people in that way and to reflect the human experience and hopefully also bring them peace and to also inspire young people who are, as I was at one point, you know, very interested in pursuing music and as something that I was very passionate about as a way to express myself and ultimately as a way to build a life for myself. So I think all of that to speak to people, bring peace, but also to inspire young people.
Have you had that opportunity already to inspire young people? And if so, can you give me an example?
Ooh, that's a good one. I like to think that through the work that I do as a flutist of Imani Winds, that I'm all the time having direct contact with young people. Anytime I go to a major concert hall, such as, you know, the Kennedy Center or something, I might do that on a Monday night, but on a Tuesday morning, I might play for 500 elementary school students. And it's so powerful to see their eyes light up and for that one student to come up to you afterwards and say that you spoke to them and that they too hope that one day that they can play the flute. So I think that I'm able through this work to reach young people. And I hope that I can continue to inspire the next generation of young musicians.
I want to talk a little bit about the sound that you produce in your instrument, because let's be honest, sometimes a flute can be kind of shrill and piercing. You, however, are able to create an incredibly beautiful, warm tone. How do you do that?
That's a great question and a very difficult one to answer, but I'll do my best. It really has to do with the development of not only the embouchure, so in the way that we form the lips in order to let air pass through into the instrument, but also the way I direct the air into the flute. And that comes through years of experience. So for me, a lot of it has had to do with the way I practice and developing the sound, the exercises that I do, you know, the same as any instrumentalist, particularly singers, to how they develop resonance. You know, it's really along the same lines. And I had a great teacher in Paris and she had a very special way of teaching sound, but it was always related to the voice. And one voice that she would refer to time and time again was Jesse Norman. And the use of head resonance and how if we as wind players, as particularly flute players, if we think about sort of sending the air up in our bodies in that way, and then out through the flute. It's a very, it sort of gives you a visual image of what you're doing, but it's very fascinating how it can really change the sound and where you sort of are focusing your attention in your body.
Brandon, you have explored solo work, chamber music, you performed with orchestras. What do you appreciate the most about each of these forms of musical expression?
To start with the orchestra, I feel like it's such a magical experience to be a part of something so much larger than yourself. Playing in an orchestra is a real team effort. And it's really, really powerful to be a part one of maybe 80 or 100 pieces. As a flute player, to really sit in the middle of all of that sound, there's really nothing quite like it. And it's like the best surround sound experience that you could ever imagine. It's just this wave of sound that as the highest voice, one of the highest voices in the orchestra, that you just sort of soar on top of that. It's a very, very powerful experience. And I'm a fan of the orchestral repertoire, particularly the music of Brahms. Unfortunately, we don't have chamber music for flute by Brahms, but his music really speaks to me, as well as the music of Shostakovich, who wrote extraordinarily well for the flute. So to have an experience to be a part of such a huge ensemble and to play, explore that fantastic repertoire, it's just really a powerful experience. What I love the most about chamber music is it's sort of the same idea of the orchestra, that you are a team player, but a lot more rest on your shoulders in chamber music, because there's only one of you, one to a part. You know, in an orchestra, you have the flute section. And yes, there you do play your own part, but you are a part of a section, and a section that's within another section that's within an orchestra. But when you're in a chamber music setting, it's really up to you. So I like being a team player, but that I'm also able to bring more of my personality to the music. I like the process in which we can arrive at musical interpretations in an orchestra. You know, we defer to the conductor. In a chamber music setting, it's really up to the ensemble to collectively arrive at an interpretation. So I really do love that process, the being able to project my personality, my musical ideas, and also the collaborative effort of arriving at those ideas through a team effort. And then as a soloist, to really just, I guess if I could be quite honest, I'm an only child. And I think there's a bit of that only kid in me that likes being on the stage, that likes being the center of attention. You know, when I went to grandma's house on the weekends, I didn't have to share that experience with anyone else. There was just two of us. And so I think there's a bit of that on the stage. But I really feel that I can really speak to the audience when it's just me on the stage, and that we are in fact having a conversation with each other, and because it's a shared experience, because I'm there sharing what I have to say through the music, but they too, I get something from the audience, and so we're able to really have this exchange, and for me that is really powerful.
You have been a member of Imani Winds now since 2018, succeeding Valerie Coleman, the founder of the ensemble. What has that meant for you to be part of this group?
Joining Imani Winds was totally a dream come true. I had admired the ensemble for so many years. I remember when I was a student in college and they came to perform on the artist recital series. And I was just, my mind was blown by this extremely high level of music making, the versatility that they played, everything from the standard wind quintets to the latest compositions that they themselves had commissioned that also incorporated a variety of influences. It was just so inspiring. And the work that the ensemble has done, being role models for young African-Americans interested in classical music, that was just all so inspiring to me. It's to see people on the stage playing at that level, but they look like me and they came from, you know, similar backgrounds. And that just was so powerful. And when I got the invitation to audition for the ensemble, I just had to do it. I think I was completely terrified because the repertoire list was so daunting. The music was so hard. Much of it I had never played before. And of course, it's Imani Winds. So I was quite nervous. And then to ultimately be offered the job was just really a dream come true. And I hope that I'm able to continue to make great contributions to the ensemble, musically, bring my own flavor, if you will, but at the same time, maintain that great level of flute playing and also of chamber musicianship that Valerie, she herself, the founder of the group, really built the ensemble on.
That I would think that'd be a little daunting, like you're, you know, moving into the position the founder had. Did you have any sense of that when you walked in?
I absolutely did. I was so, so nervous. And I think I always had in the back of my mind, oh my gosh, great Valerie Cohen. But something that really helped put me at ease was that in October 2018, literally probably a month into the job, we premiered a concerto by Valerie's with the American Composers Orchestra at Carnegie Hall. Not stressful at all. And at the first rehearsal, I got to meet Valerie and to play her great music with the orchestra. And she was so supportive, so kind, so generous, and really helped put me at ease. And she said something like, this is your baby now, like, go, you know, take it to new heights and bring your own personality and thoughts and ideas to the group. And that really helped. So I think I was getting the support from my four other colleagues, and then having met Valerie and played for her and sort of gotten her blessing really helped me feel like, okay, I'm at home.
You have dedicated yourself to the advocacy for musicians of color. You've touched on that a little bit. Can you tell me a little bit more about how you carry out that mission or how you hope to carry it out?
Yes. First and foremost, we carry out this mission by trying to play our best, striving to be the best performers that we can be and to represent our people well on the stage. I also think it comes in the form of our programming, that we play a program that represents the world in which we live and where young boys and girls can not only see themselves represented on the stage, but that they can hear themselves, their culture represented through the music that we play, that we program, that we commission. And the other thing that I would say would be through our education and outreach initiatives. As I said earlier, we very often will play a chamber music series in the evening, stay the night, and the next morning we'll do outreach concerts for young people in those halls. And there are other times when that's not the case, when we're on tour specifically to go visit programs throughout the country. Some that come to mind, Play on Philly, which the group has had an affiliation with, as well as the Atlanta Music Project. Those are experiences in my recent memory where I know we've traveled to those cities explicitly to give lessons to the students, to engage in question and answer sessions, to do master classes, and all sorts of workshops to inspire them and to answer any questions that they or their parents might have about what it is that their young child is interested in pursuing. So it's all those things combined that I think really helps advocate for musicians of color and also to inspire the next generation.
All right, let's talk about your debut solo recording now. Let's talk a little bit about the programming itself. How did you choose what music would appear on your first solo effort?
I wanted a recording that would reflect my broad interest in classical music. I wanted a program that would show the different styles of music that I can play, that interest me, that speak to me. And I also wanted a program, for lack of better words, maybe it was a go big or go home type program. It was really an adventurous program, tackling very large works for my instrument. And also there was another layer, a bit more petty, if you will, is that I was very interested at the time in composers who, I guess you could call innovators, or who were sort of forward thinking and looking forward, and also composers who were looking back and sort of drawing inspiration on traditions that had come before. So it was all of those different things that helped me arrive at this program.
So let's talk about the two contemporary works on this debut release. How is the Sonatine by Pierre Boulez an important work for the flute repertoire?
The Boulez Sonatine was actually a work that was intended for Jean-Pierre Rampal. And I don't think we've said this, but he was my flute hero as a young boy. I went to sleep listening to his recordings very, very often, and always had his sound in my ears. This work really just explored the flute in so many different ways. The level of virtuosity that is really needed to get through, to navigate the work, it's very tricky rhythmically. I'd say it's one of the most rhythmically complex works that I've ever encountered, one in which the rhythm literally changed, the meter changes, if we're talking about meter, 3-4-4-4, whatever it may be. It changes pretty much every single measure for about 11 to 12 minutes. It's very, very challenging. The way he uses the flute. Now, I don't want to say that the flute has a bit of a reputation for being this pretty charming and bird-like instrument, as maybe we've heard over the years, Sasson's famous aviary, the Volière solo from Carnival of the Animals, and other bird calls that we know, or very beautiful flute lines, such as the lyrical writing that Brahms did for the flute in the context of the orchestra. Boulez completely flips that notion on its head and says, no, the flute can be very beautiful and be very lyrical, but it can also be very aggressive. He goes as far as asking the flutist to play with a strident tone, and even more so to play violently. That's not something that flutists are very often asked to do. I can't think of a solo that I've ever played in the context of the orchestra, and much chamber music for that matter, where the flute was asked to play in that way. And in this 12-minute work by Pierre Boulez, he manages to prove that the flute can do all of those things, that it's not just this beautiful, charming instrument, but it can play lyrically, but it can also play aggressively and violently and really show all of those different kinds of emotions. Very, very powerful experience for the flute player, and I also hope for the listener.
Kalevi Aho is a contemporary Finnish composer. What decided you to feature his solo 3 on this debut recording?
Solo 3 is a really just gorgeous solo work, and also very virtuosic. It's in two movements. The first movement is very lyrical. I wanted to feature this piece for a few reasons. One being that it really allowed me, again, just like the Pierre Boulez composition, to show all of the different possibilities, tonal possibilities on the flute. He uses techniques such as quarter tones, which are what we call the notes in between the notes. So maybe just not I won't just play a G to an A flat, but I might bend the pitch a little bit to get somewhere in between. That's sort of akin to what we see a lot with string players and the glissando technique that they're able to do to bending the pitch on the fingerboard, right? We too can do this on the flute, but it's not used that often and not always in the most expressive way. And what he does is create a very, very sorrowful lyrical movement in which the flute uses these techniques. But also in the presto, which is just 4 minutes of flourishes of notes. This sort of ties in to my, the connection between composers looking forward and looking back. Kalevi uses something that he calls hidden counterpoint, which there are multiple voices happening at once. So where one note might pop out as a bass line, and then a whole nother grouping, just sort of a figure of oscillating notes, just being maybe the soprano voice, or maybe flipping that where the top note pops out as the upper sort of melodic line, and then the low sort of fast notes as a drone or a sort of a second voice. And that's something that we hear in how Bach treated the flute in his Partita, where we actually hear the counterpoint. We can hear the two lines working with and against each other.
When you're playing solo pieces like Bach's Partita in A minor, which opens this recording, you're completely exposed as a performer. And it also gives you the opportunity to put your signature on that piece. How do you do that?
Yeah, it's a very difficult question. And people often say it takes a lifetime to really understand a work of music because there's so many different ways to approach it. But because I am mostly a modern flute player, of course, I wanted to play the entire album on modern flute. But while I was at Oberlin, I also studied the Baroque flute, the Baroque traverso flute, which is a wooden instrument with only holes in one key. It's not like the instruments that we see, shiny instruments that we play now. And it has a very beautiful, warm, dark sound. And it is the instrument that Bach knew and that he wrote for. So how I wanted to put my signature on this piece, if you will, was to approach it from the sound world that perhaps Bach himself heard. So being a person who trained on the Baroque flute, leading up to recording this work, I actually did not practice it mostly on the modern flute, but actually I practiced it on the Baroque flute. And I got to arrive at a whole array of different interpretations by doing this because of the sound that that instrument is able to produce. It's a warmer, darker sound. And I also wanted to use a variety of articulations that were used at the time in that music. And also, I wanted to choose tempos that reflected the true style of that time. So taking movements maybe a little faster or a little bit slower based on what the traditions were. And then also, really showcasing my sound and the tone colors that I'm able to get on the flute. Bach does not give you much room for breathing in the partita. There are no rests really ever. You are all by yourself, you are right. But there's a beautiful opportunity to sculpt phrases, to sculpt musical phrases by incorporating breaths. And every musician is different. Every flute player is different. And they're going to hear this piece and hear the phrases in very different ways. But what I've done is really used my own breath markings and created the phrases and the way that I hear them based on the harmonic progression that Bach wrote. And hopefully listeners will hear that, and maybe that'll be my signature stamp on that piece.
Your recording concludes with Prokofiev's Sonata Opus 94 in D major for flute and piano, written during World War II. It's considered to be one of his most life-affirming works. Why is that?
It's so remarkable, the work that can come out of very, very difficult moments. We often talk about this in the visual arts, great paintings, great sculptures, great buildings that were constructed during very tumultuous times, very difficult times. And what fascinates me endlessly about the Prokofiev Sonata is that it is such a joyous, joyous work, with such soaring lines, lyrical phrases in the opening first movement. A very lighthearted and playful scherzo. Such a sweet andante movement. Exuberant, dance-like, just a very lively finish to the work. You know, really showing his complete command over ballet and dance music. It really is such a powerful, powerful work that was written at a difficult time.
Exploring the endless possibilities of the flute on a new sonata recording, the debut release from flutist Brandon Patrick George. If you're enjoying new classical tracks, the best thing that you can do for the show is to tell somebody else about it, help spread the word, and take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. Thanks to Valerie Kaler, the producer of New Classical Tracks. I'm Julie Amacher, and this is New Classical Tracks from American Public Media.